So basically what we've done, Marty and I, is we have taken yoga back about 5,000 years, because what yoga was originally, Hatha yoga, was created so that we could then do this portion. This is bhakti yoga, which is devotional yoga. Devotional yoga is basically seeking, discovering, and finding the divine in ourselves and in others. The word dharma, which is the term we use for my portion, simply means purpose. And I affirm that our purpose is, always has been, and always will be love. The challenge is we have obstacles in that way. I want to talk today about Palm Sunday. And I really love the concept of Palm Sunday. Whether you're a Christian or not, most people in our culture know the idea of Palm Sunday. It came time for Passover week, and of course, Jesus Christ, being a good Jew, wanted to go into and worship in the temple. Now, the Jews, of course, believed that God literally lived in the temple, so it was very important for them to go to Jerusalem, just as we think of Muslims having to make a pilgrimage to Mecca at least once in their lifetime. But to them, it was very important to go for Passover. Jesus, of course, gets there, and everybody expects, because this is the beginning of Jesus' great week of Passion, as Christians call it, they expect Jesus to come marching in like, you know, the A-team. Basically, he does not, as we know. He comes in on the colt of an ass or a donkey's baby. He rides in, and when he rides in, everybody lays before him what? Palms, right? That's why it's called Palm Sunday. It's all about Jesus triumphantly riding into Jerusalem, which I've always thought it's kind of funny that it's triumphant, because we know how it turned out. I was talking to someone the other day, and they were telling me that they truly believe that the Bible is literal, and I think that's great. I support anyone who believes that. For me, when you only take the Bible literally, you miss some of the beautiful symbology, the symbolism. So let me tell you the symbolism that is in Palm Sunday. First of all, I want you to know that historically, there Jesus Christ lived. People wonder whether or not there was indeed a person, Jesus Christ. Yes, it's been independently proven outside of the Christian Bible that Jesus Christ lived. Now, he was an itinerant minister. He traveled around. He had people who followed him and who celebrated him. He did a lot of great things. People believe he healed the blind. He did other miracles and everything. It came time for him to enter in as a good Jew into Jerusalem. Now, Jerusalem means city of peace. So ostensibly, he was entering into the city of peace. Now, I've told you what Jesus did, but I'll bet you don't know why Jesus did it. Because Jesus' little parade into Jerusalem was what's known as a counter-processional. When someone else is having a parade and you want to steal their thunder, you have a counter-processional. There was another person entering into Jerusalem at the same time that Jesus did. Do you know this? Jesus came in through the east gates. This is documented. And Pontius Pilate. Anybody heard of Pontius Pilate? Raise your hand, okay? The great hand washer, okay? Pontius Pilate was entering in through the east gate. Jesus was coming in through the west gate. Now, why was Pontius Pilate not in the city when that was the capital of Jerusalem and he was the Roman governor? Well, because the dude was smart. He lived at the beach. I kid you not. Pontius Pilate lived in Caesarea, which was on the coast. He left King Herod in there as a puppet king who had two responsibilities: keep the peace and collect the money. Keep the peace and collect the money. Keep the peace and collect the money. He never even went to Jerusalem except once a year on Passover. Now, why Passover? What's the significance of Passover? Well, if we consider that Passover came from a time when the Jews were occupied, or rather in this case, enslaved by another nation, Egypt. Passover, they put the lamb's blood, and the angel of death passed over. This was the final plague. This was the one that caused the Pharaoh to crack. This is the one that freed the Jews. So they're coming together to celebrate their liberation from a foreign government, and they're in occupied territory by Rome. If there's ever going to be a problem, it's going to be during Passover. Pontius Pilate knew this. He knew that King Herod himself was a Jew. He would be overrun if there was an uprising. And so what Pontius Pilate did every year was he rode into Jerusalem through the gate with five garrisons of troops, approximately 1,500 men. He came in on the biggest war horse he could find, trumpets blaring, drums roaring, people being swept aside, and he came through that gate as a way of saying, power is in the city. He did it every year. Everyone knew he was going to do it. Jesus and his followers came to Jerusalem to do their good Jewish duty and be there for Passover. And when they got there, I think someone had the idea of fulfilling the prophecy in Zechariah. They went and got a little colt, and Jesus came in, and they laid before his feet what? One more time. What did they lay before his feet? Palms. Palms are not indigenous to Jerusalem. Palms don't grow in Jerusalem. They grow at the coast. Palms in Roman society meant victory. Victory. Now, I don't know what would have upset Pontius Pilate the most, coming all the way from the beach and having Jesus do this mockery of him, which is exactly what it was, or if he saw all these palm fronds and go, where the hell did they get the palm fronds? This was intentional. This was a way of saying, your outer power is no power. External control can never control that which is divine and that which is within, within everyone. The people were saying, we're going to be guided by our hearts. We're not going to be cowed by you. You see, in that society, if an emperor had a declaration and wanted to back it up with war, he would make the declaration from atop a war horse. If he was saying, I will kill over what I'm saying, he was on a war horse. However, he would ride in on a donkey if it was just an announcement for the good of the people. Jesus was just saying, I have an announcement for the good of the people. You may seem stuck. You may seem occupied. You may seem persecuted. But if you can first be free in your heart and in your mind, you can be free in your life. I have long ago discovered that my life is fodder for my work. As a writer and a professional speaker, when things go wrong in my life, they bug me, but then ultimately I go, wow, that's a good story. Let me tell you a good story. I was speaking this week in Nashville. It was my second speech this week. I was speaking to a company called Accelerant, which is a really great organization. They're all over the United States. This was my third time speaking with them. And what I like about them is they are corporate executive development within cities. There's an organization here. They are industry exec exclusive. In other words, they'll only take one law firm, one accounting firm, and then they go through and there's about 30 different categories. And then they bring these people together and they bring in top speakers and trainers to work with them. And I've had the opportunity to work with them, as I say, deliver speeches now in three cities. This time, because I was going to Nashville, they are expanding, and they thought, what if, now we've never had this happen before, but we hire 20, 30 speakers a year. What if a speaker doesn't show up to one of our offices, one of our events? This would be so embarrassing. So they called me and they said, we really like your speech. We want to videotape your speech when you speak in Nashville. And then if somebody else doesn't show up, every office will have your speech, show your speech. And we'll pay you. How long did you think I had to consider that? Now, my style now is I have a style. I wear a black t-shirt, jeans, and boots when I speak. That's how I like to speak. This is an executive organization. They asked me specifically to wear a suit. So I pulled out my suits, blew the dust off of them. But I've got some really nice suits. I've got this, a buddy gave me this custom-made blue shirt, and it's really beautiful. I knew I'd be on camera, and Marty always says, blue brings out your eyes, so I put on the blue shirt. Now, let me tell you about this speaking engagement. So I'm in Nashville, Tennessee, and I don't ever pay attention to where I'm going. I have a great assistant. I mean that sincerely, because I have a great assistant, and he puts it in my calendar, and I just go, okay, where am I? And I look. So I go looking in my calendar, and it says that a car is picking me up, and I go down. And as always happens with Accelerant, there is a black town car, immaculately polished and clean. There is an immaculately polished and clean driver picking me up who insists on holding the door and calling me Mr., 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 and Sir. At first, you go, oh, God. And pretty soon, you start to go, that's right. So that morning, they picked me up for my speech at 6:45 in the morning. Now, I had to already be checked out of my room. They took me to my venue. The venue was the Bridgestone Amphitheater. Anybody follow sports? This is the big Nash. It's like our Sprint Center, okay? But what they had done was they, in the lobby, the outside area, like when you go where, if you're going to get drinks at the Sprint Center, all that big area, the concourse, I've always heard it called. They have really made the Bridgestone Center cool. They put couches and cars. It's just an amazing thing, and it's won all these awards. Well, they put 20 tables out there, and I was speaking to about 200 people. And, of course, I mean, you're talking, I'm outside of a major arena, and you're talking 100-foot ceilings, hard walls. I go in, and I'm wearing my blue shirt because it looks good with my eyes and because I'm going to be videotaped. And I step up on stage, and I kid you not, this ottoman I'm sitting in is about the size of the stage I was given. Now, normally, I'm a wanderer, especially with a big live audience, you know? And so then they set up lights for the video. I kid you not. Now, these lights are coming down on me. This is okay. I'm not having to look into the lights to see you. They put the lights between me and the audience. I literally, if I ever tried to look at the audience, I would be looking right into the eyes, right into the lights. It was so quiet in there. That's what amazed me. Have you ever been into a major sporting, like a basketball arena, and it's empty? I once spoke at the Houston Rockets arena, too, and it's just ethereal to hear it so quiet because we're just used to noise and energy. So I'm explaining to this dude that I need the lights moved, please. And then this guy comes up, and I say, I need a lavalier mic or a Countryman, which is what this is. And this guy was either union or woke up on the bad side of the bed or both. As my mama would say, nothing wrong with unions. I mean, he just was like, he did not care. Now, mind you, does anybody know what I speak on? Not complaining. In fact, I realized last week, this is something I realized, I am the world authority expert on not complaining. I say that because to my mind, on three continents, there are 10 books on the subject. I've written 2 and am mentioned in 8. So I'm the no complaining guy. And I know that everybody's always looking at me to see if I'm going to get ticked. Really, it's true. And that's great. Honestly, I need that accountability, don't we all, right? So we get the lights moved, and I notice as I look down, now there's a reason I always wear black, and there's a reason most speakers always wear black. We sweat, and we don't want you to see it, right? So I look down, and I have these little blue-white streaks going down my blue shirt. And I'm going to be on what?
Camera.
Camera forever. So I go outside the Bridgestone Center where it's cool, just to cool myself, and I did what I always do. Before I speak, I always call Marty, and Marty prays me in. She says the prayer to center me. I go back in. Now, mind you, too, I hadn't eaten. I had not eaten. And if anybody has ever seen the original Werewolf with Lon Chaney Jr., I kid you not. You need to lock me up past a certain point. Because when I get hypo something, I don't know. I just go like, so I'm starting to, I realize I'm sweating, too, because I'm hungry and my hands are shaking. So I'm like, the buffet table. So I go over to the buffet table and I look.